Book 22, page 223. Then Odysseus tore off his rags and sprang onto the broad pavement with his bow and his quiver full of arrows. He shed the arrows onto the ground at his feet and said, "The mighty contest is at an end. I will now see whether Apollo will vouchsafe it to me to hit another mark which no man yet has hit." On this, he aimed a deadly arrow at Antinous, who was about to take up a two-handled gold cup to drink his wine and already had it in his hands. He had no thought of death. Who amongst all the revelers would think that one man, however brave, would stand alone among so many and kill him? The arrow struck Antinous in the throat, and the point went clean through his neck, so that he fell over, and the cup dropped from his hand, while a thick stream of blood gushed from his nostrils. He kicked the table from him and upset the things on it, so that the bread and roasted meats were all soiled as they fell over onto the ground. The suitors were in an uproar when they saw that a man had been hit. They sprang in dismay, one and all of them, from their seats and looked everywhere towards the walls. But there was neither shield nor spear. Remember, the weapons are hidden away. And they rebuked Odysseus very angrily. "Stranger," they said, "you shall pay for shooting people this way. You shall see no other contest. You are a doomed man. He whom you have slain was the foremost youth in Ithaca, and the vultures shall devour you for having killed them." Thus they spoke, for they thought that he had killed Antinous by mistake, and did not perceive that death was hanging over the heads of every one of them. But Odysseus glared at them and said, "Dogs, did you think that I should not come back from Troy? You have wasted my substance. You have forced my women servants to lie with you, and you have wooed my wife while I was still living. You have feared neither God nor man, and now you shall die." They turned pale with fear as he spoke, and every man looked round about to see whether he might fly for safety. But Eurymachus alone spoke. "If you are Odysseus," he said, "then what you have said is just, it's fair. We have done much wrong on your lands and in your house, but Antinous, who was the head in front of the offending, lies low already. It was all his doing. It was not that he wanted to marry Penelope. He didn't so much care about that. What he really wanted was something quite different. And Zeus has not vouchsafed it to him. He wanted to kill your son and be chief man in Ithaca. Now, therefore, that he has met the death which was his due, spare the lives of your people. We will make everything good among ourselves and pay you in full for all that we have eaten and drunk. Each one of us shall pay you a fine worth 20 oxen, and we will keep on giving you gold and bronze till your heart is softened. Until we have done this, no one can complain of your being enraged against us." So this is Eurymachus. Remember the one that's really concerned with his reputation, saving face? And he says, "Oh, whoa, hang on just a minute. If you really are Odysseus, oops, my bad. You really have every right to be mad at us. But truthfully, Antinous, the dead guy right there, it was all his fault. It's his idea. All we did was follow. So you should be mad at him, and you already killed him. So how about the rest of us just write you an IOU, and we'll pay you back?" What do you think Odysseus will say? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Yeah. Well, would he normally, do it, though? Accept that before he matured?
I don't know if he would accept that or not. I mean, think about it. These men are trying to win his wife, marry his wife. They've been living in his house. They've threatened his son. They forced the women servants to lie with them for some cuddling, right? I don't know. I don't know if there was ever a point where that would have been enough for him. Okay? This is not the same as wanting a present. Odysseus again glared at Eurymachus. "Though you should give me all that you have in the world, both now and all that you ever shall have, I will not stay my hand till I have paid all of you in full. You must fight or fly for your lives, and fly not a man of you shall." Odysseus basically says, there's not enough money in the world to pay me back. Not possible. You have two choices, fight or run away. And by the way, you can't run. Why can't they run?
Because he has a bow.
The doors have been blocked, right? The weapons are hidden. The plan has been put into motion. Where are the women? Locked away, kept safe. It's on. Their hearts sank as they heard him. But Eurymachus again spoke, saying, "My friends, this man will give us no quarter," meaning no mercy. He will stand where he is and shoot us down till he has killed every man among us. Let us then show fight. Draw your swords and hold up the tables to shield you from the arrows. Let us have at him with a rush to drive him from the pavement and doorway. We can then get through into the town and raise such an alarm as shall soon stay his shooting. As he spoke, he drew his keen blade of bronze, sharpened on both sides, and with a loud cry, he sprang towards Odysseus. But Odysseus instantly shot an arrow into his breast that caught him by the nipple and fixed itself in his liver. He dropped his sword and fell doubled up over his table. The cup and all the meats went over onto the ground as he smote the earth with his forehead in the agonies of death. And he kicked the stool with his feet until his eyes were closed in darkness. So body count, now we're down by two. The first two guys, gone. Odysseus means business. Then, I'm just going to let you know, the names in this chapter are somewhat of a struggle for me, so don't laugh, bear with me. Then, Amphinomus drew his sword and made straight at Odysseus to try and get him away from the door. But Telemachus was too quick for him and struck him from behind. The spear caught him between the shoulders and went right through his chest, so that he fell heavily to the ground and struck the earth with his forehead. Then Telemachus sprang away from him, leaving his spear still in his body, for he feared that if he stayed to draw the spear out, one of the Achaeans might come up and hack at him with his sword, or knock him down, so he set off at a run, and immediately was at his father's side. Then Telemachus said, "Father, let me bring you a shield, two spears, and a brass helmet for your temples. I will arm myself as well, and will bring other armor for the swineherd and the stockman." Remember the two servants who were loyal? "For we had better be armed." "Run and fetch them," answered Odysseus, "while my arrows hold out. Or, when I am alone, they may get me away from the door." Keep in mind, he's against the door so that his back is to the door, right? So no one can attack him from behind. It's his strategy at this point. Telemachus did as his father said, and went off to the storeroom where the armor was kept. He chose four shields, eight spears, and four brass helmets with horsehair plumes. He brought them with all speed to his father, and armed himself first, while the stockman and the swineherd also put on their armor and took their places near Odysseus. Meanwhile, Odysseus, as long as his arrows lasted, had been shooting the suitors one by one, and they fell thick on one another. When his arrows gave out, he set the bow to stand against the end wall of the house by the doorpost, and hung a shield four hides thick about his shoulders. On his comely head he set his helmet, well wrought with a crest of horsehair that nodded menacingly above it, and he grasped two redoubtable bronze-shod spears. Now, there was a trap door on the wall, while at one end of the pavement there was an exit leading to a narrow passage. This exit was closed by a well-made door. Odysseus told Philoetius, one of the servants who were loyal, to stand by this door and guard it, for only one person could attack it at a time. But Agelaus shouted out, "Can't someone go up to the trap door and tell the people what's going on? Help would come at once, and we should soon make an end of this man and his shooting." "This may not be, Agelaus," answered Melanthius. Remember Melanthius, the cheater with the lard and the fire? The mouth of the narrow passage is dangerously near the entrance to the outer court. One brave man could prevent any number from getting in. But I know what I will do. I will bring you arms from the storeroom, for I am sure it is there that Odysseus and his son have put them." On this, the goatherd Melanthius went by back passages to the storeroom of Odysseus' house. There he chose 12 shields with as many helmets and spears, and brought them back as fast as he could to give to the suitors. Odysseus' heart began to fail him when he saw the suitors putting on this armor and brandishing spears. He saw the greatness of the danger, and he said to Telemachus, "Some one of the women must be inside helping the suitors against us, or maybe it's Melanthius." Telemachus answered, "The fault, father, is all mine, and mine only." 226. "I left the storeroom door open, and they have kept a sharper lookout than I have. Go, Eumaeus, put the door to, and see whether it is one of the women who's doing this, or whether, as I suspect, it is Melanthius, son of Dolius." Again, Telemachus proves himself to be honorable. He doesn't blame someone else. He takes responsibility. He says, "That was my fault. I left that door open, and I wasn't watching carefully enough." Thus did they converse. Meanwhile, Melanthius was again going to the storeroom to fetch even more armor. But the swineherd saw him this time and said to Odysseus, "Odysseus, noble son of Laertes, it is that scoundrel Melanthius, just as we suspected. who is going to the storeroom. Say, shall I kill him, if I can get the better of him? Or shall I bring him here, that you may take your own revenge for all the many wrongs that he has done in your house? In other words, should I kill him outright, or should I bring him back alive? Odysseus answered, Telemachus and I will hold these suitors in check, no matter what they do. Go back, both of you, and bind Melanthius's hands and feet behind him. Throw him into the storeroom, and make the door fast behind you. Then fasten a noose about his body, and string him up close to the rafters from a high bearing post, that he may linger on in agony. What are they supposed to do?
Hang him.
Basically, but not hang him to kill him. First they're going to, like, hog tie him. They're going to bend his arms and legs behind his back and tie them together. Fasten a noose, not about his neck, but about his body, and hang him from the rafters. The word for this would be torture. Okay? In other words, killing him outright would be too kind. They're going to torture him first. Yikes, right?
Beat him with a stick.
Keep that in mind. Thus did he speak, and they did even as he had said. They went to the storeroom, which they entered before Melanthius even saw them, for he was busy searching for arms in the innermost part of the room. So the two took their stand on either side of the door and waited. By and by, Melanthius came out with a helmet in one hand and an old dry-rotted shield in the other, which had been borne by Laertes when he was young, but which had been long since thrown aside, and the straps had become unsewn. On this, the two seized him, dragged him back by his hair, and threw him struggling to the ground. They bent his hands and feet well behind his back, and bound them tight with a painful bond, as Odysseus had told them. Then they fastened a noose about his body and strung him up from a high pillar till he was close up to the rafters. And over him did you then vaunt, O swineherd Eumaeus, saying, Melanthius, you will pass the night on as soft a bed as you deserve. You will know very well when morning comes from the streams of Oceanus, and it is time for you to be driving in your goats for the suitors to feast on. There then they left him in very cruel bondage. Having put on their armor, they closed the door behind them and went back to take their places by the side of Odysseus, whereon the four men stood in the cloister, fierce and full of fury. Nevertheless, those who were in the body of the court were still both brave and many. Then Zeus's daughter, Athena, came up to them, having assumed the voice and form of Mentor. This is kind of Athena's thing, right? Disguises. She does this all throughout the story. Odysseus was glad when he saw her and said, Mentor, lend me your help, and forget not your old comrade, nor the many good turns he has done you. Besides, you are my age mate. So Athena's disguised as one of Odysseus's old friends, and Odysseus says, hey, old friend, come and fight on my side. But all the time, Odysseus was sure it was actually Athena. And the suitors from the other side raised an uproar when they saw her. Agelaus was the first to reproach her. Mentor, he cried, do not let Odysseus beguile you into siding with him and fighting the suitors. This is what we will do. When we have killed these people, both father and son, we will kill you too. You shall pay for it, bless you, with your head. And when we have killed you, we will take all that you have, indoors or out, and bring it into hodgepodge with Odysseus's property. We will not let your sons live in your house, nor your daughters, nor shall your widow continue to live in the city of Ithaca. So the suitors yell at Mentor, who is Athena in disguise, don't fight for Odysseus, or else, and then they threaten him. If you fight for that side, we'll kill you. And what's more, we'll steal all your stuff once you're dead, and we'll make sure your wife and children are homeless.
How are they supposed to get to the guy land?
How are they supposed to get to the what?
The god's land, if they're going to kill her and take all their stuff.
They don't know it's her.
Exactly.
Yeah. What? This made Athena still more furious. So she scolded Odysseus very angrily. Odysseus, she said, your strength and prowess are no longer what they were when you fought for 9 long years among the Trojans about the noble lady Helen. You killed many a man in those days, and it was through your strategy that Priam's city was taken. How comes it that you are so lamentably less valiant now that you are on your own ground, face to face with the suitors in your own house? Come on, my good fellow, stand by my side and see how Mentor, son of Alcimus, shall fight your foes and requite your kindness conferred upon him. It's meant to be a pep talk, right? Like when your coach says, what were you doing? You're better than this. Come on. Are you being wimps right now? It's meant to be a pep talk. It's meant to inspire him to fight even harder.
We're
because
Troy,
what?
You were better in Troy.
Yes, you used to be this great fighter. Why don't I see that anymore? Come on, you're better than this. Remember, Athena looks at Odysseus kind of like her little pet human. She wants him to win. She wants him to do well. However, because she's a goddess, she's capable. If she wanted to, she could snap her fingers. Suitor's dead. War over. Odysseus is king again. Why doesn't she?
She wants to see the battle. She wants to see him
succeed. Part of it, she wants to see the battle. What else?
She wants to see him succeed.
She wants him to succeed. She wants him to prove himself. She wants him, what were we saying earlier, to win, but to win big. She wants him to look really good doing it. Definitely. But she would not give him full victory as yet, for she wished still further to prove his own prowess and that of his brave son. Aha, not just Odysseus, but Telemachus too. So Athena flew up to one of the rafters in the roof of the cloister and sat upon it in the form of a swallow. Like a bird. So she disguises herself yet again. No more mentor. Now she's a bird. And she's watching from the ceiling. The suitors don't really notice that. Which is kind of weird. But they don't. All right. Meanwhile, Agelaus, son of Demastor, Eurynomus, Amphimedon, Demoptolemus, Pisander, and Polybus, son of Polyctor, bore the brunt of the fight upon the suitors' side. Of all those who were still fighting for their lives, they were by far the most valiant, for the others had already fallen under the arrows of Odysseus. Agelaus shouted to the men and said, "Friends, he will soon have to leave off, for Mentor has gone away after having done nothing for him but brag. They are standing at the doors unsupported. Do not aim at him all at once, but six of you throw your spears first and see if you can't cover yourselves with glory by killing him. When he has fallen, we need not be uneasy about the others." So one of the suitors who's still alive says, "All right, guys, a little strategy. Come on, we can do this." He gives his own little pep talk. "Here's what we're going to do. Six of you, count of three, try to kill him with your spears." They threw their spears as he bade them, but Athena made them all of no effect. This always makes me think of action movies, how the bad guys have machine guns and they shoot and not a single bullet hits the good guys, but the good guys can, like, have a tiny little pistol, one shot, and kill everyone. Okay, so Athena makes it so that the bad guys have really bad aim. Okay? So Athena made them all of no effect. One hit the doorpost, another went against the door, the pointed shaft of another struck the wall, and as soon as they had avoided all the spears of the suitors, Odysseus said to his men, "My friends, I should say we too had better let drive into the middle of them, or they will crown all the harm they have done us by killing us outright. Odysseus says, "Okay, our turn, let's try the same thing, let's attack." They therefore aimed straight in front of them and threw their spears. And of course, the good guys have good aim. Odysseus killed Demoptolemus, Telemachus killed Eurybates, Eumaeus killed Elatus, while the stockman killed Pisander. These all bit the dust. And as the others drew back into a corner, Odysseus and his men rushed forward and regained their spears by drawing them from the bodies of the dead.